DW.
Diane Wei-Liang is a 53-year-old novelist and former business professor who lives in the beautiful Holland Park area of London. But 30 years ago, she was a student at Beijing University.
The 80s in Beijing was exciting to begin with. China was really going through the first opening up period, and there was a lot of freedom.
Inside the university campuses, students were westernizing fast. They wore jeans, which were officially forbidden as symbols of bourgeois decadence. And worst of all, they set up coffee shops.
Coffee was novelty, coffee was Western, coffee was considered to be, I don't know, rebellious. And so there were students-run coffee houses where we then debated about politics and how to make China better. New ideas that came through readings, but also through people whose parents had traveled overseas. Then the discussions became what kind of authority we're dealing with, what kind of rights we have. That was when the democracy movement sort of started.
What sparked the student demonstrations was the death of the former Communist Party chairman, Hu Yaobang, who had tried to push for reforms including freedom of the press. But he had been ousted and defamed by his fellow party leaders. The students seized upon his death in April 1989 to celebrate the principles of freedom he had stood for. They created a petition calling on the Communist Party to give Hu Yaobang the recognition he deserved.
We decided to go and deliver this to the government while the funeral was happening. So the students marched from Beijing University to Tiananmen Square. That's quite a long way. It takes half a day just to walk there. For hours, no one came to accept it. So this, we felt we were completely ignored.
Angry at being ignored, their petition turned into a full-scale protest in Tiananmen Square, demanding reforms. In a churchyard near London's British Library, I'm meeting 51-year-old Xiao Jiang, a visiting lecturer at Westminster University. Back in 1989, Xiao was one of the students who helped to draft their demands for reform.
The seven demands, first of all, were relevant to Hu Yaobang. You must give some the right assessment to Hu Yaobang. Second is about the free press. The government cannot forbidden free press, because now is all the press and the media is controlled by the government.
Other demands called for an end to corruption and nepotism within the Communist Party and the right to protest. But the demands were ignored, and so the students stopped attending classes and began to organise for their first mass march on Tiananmen Square.
It's like the student revolution. All the people are very spanning. And a sun, and chanting slogan, and take the banner, and like the go to the festival, not very very sad.
And at some point, the whole column will start singing, and we were singing communist songs.
There were an estimated 100,000 students from across Beijing marching together with the city's residents lining the route to cheer them on. The students had been told not to go ahead with the protest, and eventually their way was blocked by ranks of police.
So it was very calm, very organized, but very determined, and we didn't back up. And then we broke through. I think that was the first day of organized march to Tiananmen. But I believe that was the turning point that we felt that from then on, it just it literally exploded. We marched Tiananmen every day, and they became bigger and bigger.
The protests swelled as workers from across Beijing joined the students in the square.
I remember one day when we were marching around, that was one of the days that had a million people marching in Tiananmen Square and with banners. And we felt nearly the whole city came out to support us. And then every group had their own banners. You could see which university they're from, which department, or you could see the Wang Fujing bookstore people marching. You could see the, whatever factory, whatever. So they were all there.
A spirit of freedom was in the air, encapsulated by the music of Chinese rock god Cui Jian, whose songs rang out across the square as he played for the crowds. As the weeks passed, there was no sign of movement from the government, and so the students began to hunger strike. Their willingness to sacrifice themselves for the good of the country touched the hearts of many people.
A lot of people left sort of the letters to parents, the last letters to parents possibly. I remember being in one of the tents, and you would always hear someone shouting, "Ambulance here." Because you would just have someone sitting there, and it would, they are on hunger strike, they fainted. And there was a very sort of sombering mood that we've come to this point that perhaps some sacrifices are needed in order for this movement to move ahead.
But by the start of June, it was becoming clear that nothing was going to make the government listen. And as the students continued to occupy the square, they became more and more afraid.
2 days before, I think I was nervous then, because it was my turn to do the security at night. I think we were there, sort of sitting at the very outside, in holding hands. And then we were tired, we sat down. It was really dark. And it was past midnight, it was 2 o'clock in the morning. It was so dark, and there were rumors that there were soldiers inside all these buildings. We were pretty nervous. We felt maybe we were not as strong as we thought, because we were unarmed. I certainly was totally scared that night, but no one left. You could feel everyone was cold, everyone was shaking, and everyone held hands. And then the following day, which was the 3rd, 3 o'clock, 4 o'clock in the afternoon, you turn on the radio, every station broadcasts the same announcement that please do not go outside. It was the same announcement over again. And the students took it as we must reinforce our friends in the square. And then there were people literally knocking on the door, said, "Wake up, something's happening."
In the early hours of June the 4th, the shooting began. Xiao Jiang was in Tiananmen Square.
In the evening, around, I just heard some shooting, so I just run to the Chang'an Avenue. The deaths, the number is large, this area, including some the student, my classmate died in this area. I just look, if the people just shouting them, the fascism, they shoot you. Even you didn't block the tank, and sometimes the soldier just shoot pavement, the people, and they don't care about it, just shoot.
So in the morning, there were some bodies being brought back, and there was a doctor came in to talk about how people were dying in the square, and he was there trying to save them. And then we start looking for people who were missing on campus, and we were pretty shocked. It wasn't something we thought would happen.
In the days that followed, there was a news blackout in China. Diane tried to go to see the scene of the massacre for herself.
I thought bullet holes would be the size of a bullet. Now, the bullet holes, when it hit the building, maybe explodes, they were huge. The press was saying no one died, and thugs killed the soldiers, and that was very much broadcast. We didn't, open fire, and I thought, I gotta go see this for myself. Of course, the bullet holes on every building, all the way in toward Tiananmen, and at some point you couldn't go.
After the crackdown, the student leaders went into hiding. Diane's parents urged her to leave the city.
We didn't have time to think the implications. We were just trying to, everyone trying to stay safe, trying to make sure all your friends are safe. My friends also, they went home. They went to stay with their relatives so that Beijing was very much empty.
Xiao Jiang spent the days after the massacre trying to tell the world what had happened. He handed out mimeographed copies of his witness statement to foreign journalists or to Chinese people who were heading to Hong Kong. He was arrested and sent into exile. Today, there is pain in his eyes when he thinks back to Tiananmen.
Especially I witnessed this massacre. I lost the freedom. But I think about some people, my generation, some people lost their life. I survived. As a survivor, I must think about what they want to struggle. They died. We must think about their ideal.
A few months after the massacre, Diane left China to study in America, where she went on to become a professor of business. After many years of absence, she now regularly returns to China.
Every time I go back, I'm reminded why we were there. It's a wonderful country. It's prosperous, and the people have enjoyed a lot more freedom, free travel abroad. And yet, still China is China. There is still the border. There's still the limit.
Inside the Chinese borders today, it remains impossible to learn about the protests at Tiananmen Square or the massacre which ended them. China's press is still under the party's thumb, and foreign reporters are obstructed from doing their work. Human rights violations against the Uyghur people in Xinjiang are falsely reported as good news stories inside China. Xiao Jiang has a stark warning for us all about why we must not forget Tiananmen or turn a blind eye to the authoritarian nature of China's government.
If you give up, not China problem, no democracy, no human rights, it become your country.
This is Freddie Chick for DW.
DW.